from here, or which will consume hundreds of thousands.
IAU Montreal, 15 August 79. Barney Oliver introducing the second session on search for extraterrestrial intelligence.
We would have had so much difficulty finding $3,000 for the second time. I'm impressed by that fact. Many of us believe that interstellar contact is possible, that interstellar intelligence is a common phenomenon in the galaxy, and the contact will come through communication of some sort. Those of us who have studied the various ways in which communication may be established and quickly come to the conclusion that radio waves, electromagnetic waves, are the answer, again, for imaging considerations. Speaking of videos, one of the particles that is somehow shown in the internet that is less than light years left, then you can catch the neutrinos eventually out of the thing about neutrinos. We have looked at the energetics of the situation and have come to the conclusion that radio is a promising means, one that is likely to produce success if we apply enough effort to it. So in the second half of this morning's session, we are going to hear various views and programs described that involve radio as a means of a search for extraterrestrial intelligence. Our first speaker in this second session this morning is Lindsay Benzer, and we're going to talk about programs in the USA and Canada on SETI.
Progress in the search for extraterrestrial civilizations by means of the radio waves that they might emit, and in particular, I'm supposed to review the progress that's been made in the United States and in Canada. And before I begin, I'd like to express my sincere appreciation to Dr. Frank Drake and Dr. Jill Carter, both who supplied me with very much useful information and slides and things that I've been able to use in the talk today. To my knowledge, there are less than a dozen searches that have been carried out in the United States and Canada for radio waves among the civilizations, and all these searches have been negative, to the best of my knowledge, unless there's someone out there who's hiding something in his bottom drawer and doesn't know about it. Of these dozen or so searches, I'm only going to have time to mention approximately half a dozen, and I'll do this in roughly chronological order. Could I have the first slide, please? This is a slightly dated compendium of some SETI programs up until 1975. And of the ones on this list, the only ones that I'll be concerned with today are the last four, and then I'll add two others that are more recent than this, and I'm not showing this particular slide. Let me begin with the program about which I sort of have the least to say. Not because it's the least important, but just that's the way it worked out. Dr. Ryle and Feldman here in Canada have been using the Algonquin radio telescope, 150 feet in diameter. Some of the numbers in the slide are a little bit inaccurate. The search at the frequency of the interstellar waterline, about 22 gigahertz, and they've covered a range of plus or minus 5 megacycles around that frequency, with a frequency resolution of 30 kilohertz. They looked at about 70 stars today, all of which are within 45 light years of the Earth, and their sensitivity is a few times 10 to the minus 22 watts per meter squared. As you'll see, that's a relatively insensitive search compared to the half dozen, so I will be discussing that. The total number of hours expended is about 140, and right now, as I understand it, the program is in limbo due to lack of an appropriate receiver of 22 gigahertz. Second program, about which I also unfortunately don't have too much to say because Dr. Dixon is carrying this out and myself had some problem communicating with one another. Joni led me to realize how difficult communication over this would be. And I do have a slide, though, the one slide that I've been able to incorporate into my talk, which is shown on the next. Next slide. This is a picture of Dr. Dixon's telescope at the Ohio State, and he's using his telescope to search at 21 centimeters wavelength, the classical hydrogen frequency. It's an all-sky survey, and so as to not prejudice himself in terms of the direction of the star which he's looking, or our direction, he's looking actually with respect to the 21 centimeter rest frequency with respect to the galactic center. Everybody's supposed to correct for their motion about the galactic center. And this is important because the total range of frequencies of which he's searching is only plus or minus 190 kilohertz with respect to the hydrogen rest frequency. His resolution is about 10 kilohertz. Right now the program is, which has been continuing since 1973, on a continuous 24-hour, 365-day-per-year basis since December 1973. That covered about half the sky, and their limiting sensitivity is of order a few times 10 to the minus 41 watts per meter squared, about 10 times less sensitive than the Rigel Feldman search. Okay, I'm sorry for the rush, but I've got to cover a lot of programs in a limited amount of time. The next program I'd like to say something about is the program that Pat Palmer and I have been carrying out. So that's shown on the next slide. We've dubbed our program OSMIC-2. It's this, and I'll just let you can just read yourself some of the numbers off the slide. I think they're quite self-explanatory. The main point is that our data taking rate, 14 years after Frank Drake carried out OSMIC-1, was about 10 million times faster than his data taking rate. And so we felt that the renewed effort would be worthwhile. The telescope using is a 300 foot telescope, which is sort of shown on the next slide. but I thought this is the best picture I had. Anyway, I'd like to show Matt's picture. Jill Tarter collaborators also used the 300 foot telescope. So this telescope has been quite heavily used for these kind of programs. The next slide shows the sky noise, but something I think you've probably all seen this slide about 100 times. So I don't want to belabor it. For those of you who are not experts, I just want to know that one of the reasons people choose the 21 centimeter frequency is it's sort of in a minimum of the sky noise. Most of the searches
have they written up the OSMIC-2? I've never seen anything.
Jill Carter and collaborators is at the OH frequency, which is right next to it on the scale. Rigel and Feldman searches at the waterline frequency, which it fundamentally is just as good as the 21 centimeter frequency in terms of the universe, but the Earth's atmosphere will give you some problems in terms of sensitivity. In our particular search, we searched about 10 megacycles around the hydrogen line, also the narrower bandwidth, 625 kilohertz. Our resolutions were 64 and 4 kilohertz respectively, and we centered at the hydrogen line rest frequency in the rest frame of the star we were looking at. And the next slide shows how many such stars there were. This is just a summary of our observing runs. There's actually one that we carried out in 1976 where we added 15 new stars and reobserved 9 for a total of 674 stars observed. That was also the 140 foot telescope. The repeats were basically stars that had glitches, which probably just false alarms, but you have to go back and look at them. The next slide shows a distribution of 600 odd objects over the sky. There's the southern hemisphere. Our sensitivity was about 10 to the minus 23 watts per meter squared, so somewhat more sensitive than the previous two searches. And these stars are pretty much all F, G, K, and M spectrum class main sequence stars. We did look at close and wide binaries. We included multiple star systems because we do believe that orbits can be stable for billions of years if the binaries are either very closely, the spacing is close, or very distant with respect to the radius of the zone of light. We used the Gliese catalog to look for stars within 25 parsecs of the sun. Some of the other searches have used the Royal Greenwich Observatory catalog, also stars within 25 parsecs of the sun. Our search, and also these other searches, would miss leakage signals, such as TV transmissions, such as Mork and Mindy or something like that. In our case, it would be about a factor of a million, so the most sensitive searches would miss by some few times, few orders of magnitude less, but still factors at least 1,000 or 10,000 in terms of the picking up the leakage of Freud there. So we look for beacons, and the this is not unreasonable. The next slide shows what you're doing if you're looking within 25 parsecs of the sun. You're looking at something of the order of the size of that bright dot. I think it's actually probably even smaller than that. So you really are looking at your nearest neighbors on a galactic scale. It's not unreasonable to think they may be beaming your direction. So all the targeted search programs I'll be describing, all looking at regions of the galaxy of order that size. Now the Drake Sagan extragalactic effort, in which M31 was included, in which I'll describe to you in just a minute or so, look at entire galaxies, but not our own. This is, again, one of the galaxies that they looked at. The next slide, I think the last slide in our work, shows just the data. Is it, we obtained it. This is, shows 4-minute scans on over a 2-week time period, actually 1 week, and then come back a year later, look another week. This is the 21-centimeter line, and the kind of things you look for are glitches, signals that are there on one day and not on other days, or very narrow, unresolved features. These are just a couple of stars. Okay, the next program I'd like to talk about is the Drake Sagan Galactic Search Program. And this is a list of the galaxies that they searched with the Arecibo telescope. And they looked at 9 positions in these 3 galaxies, and many positions in M33, and many positions in M31. And for example, the next slide shows the positions that were observed at M33. Could you raise it just a little bit to show the beam size? This is the Arecibo beam, or actually it's the spacing of the dots. Okay, good. So you can see they looked at a lot of positions in M33. The next slide shows the characteristics of their search. They centered on the hydrogen line rest frequency again in the frame of the galaxy they're looking at. If possible, in the case of M33, they knew the systemic, they knew the velocity of the hydrogen in each of those positions, so they're able to center on the velocity and the position they looked in the galaxy. If they didn't, they just centered on the systemic velocity or a variety of systemic velocities. They covered 3 megacycles with 1 kilohertz resolution. And their sensitivity was about 10 to the minus 24 watts per meter squared. So this is about 10 times more sensitive than Palmer and myself, and perhaps 100 times more sensitive than Bridle and Feldman. Notice, however, that they're sensitive not just to sort of civilizations that border our own level or slightly beyond it, but civilizations which can radiate effectively. You put a 1 megawatt transmitter on an Arecibo type antenna, you need 10 to the 8th such antennas, or 10 to the 8 times more powerful transmitter in order for them to detect it, because they're looking at other galaxies. So that although their sensitivity is very good, their sensitivity for detecting type 1, Kardashev type 1 civilizations, which we are, is hopeless. They have to look at Kardashev type 2 or Kardashev type 3 civilizations. And that's program. The next program is due to Paul Horowitz. This was a paper, actually one of the few published papers in a reputable journal in Science Magazine about a year ago. Horowitz used ultra-high spectral resolution and had very high sensitivity because he used the Arecibo telescope, but he covered a very limited range of phase space. The reason for using a very narrow spectral band is something a lot of us know, but let me just repeat it in 2 sentences in case you're not familiar with the argument. If somebody out there, if a gal on the other end, for example, has a given amount of power she wants to transmit, then the way that power can be detected over the largest possible distance is if you jam it into the narrowest possible bandwidth. And so that's the motivation for this choice of bandwidth. It's set by the actual consideration of why this number was chosen is it was set by the stability of the Rubidium oscillator at Arecibo, and also calculations that have been done on scattering, multiple scattering in the interstellar medium for close stars within, say, 25 parsecs, which is the kind of stars Horowitz searched. The scattering would broaden the monochromatic signal, initially monochromatic signal, out to something like this family, so that's why he used that. He covered only plus or minus 500 hertz, total of numbers, 1 kilohertz of the spectrum, centered on the hydrogen line rest frequency again, And because he covered such a small range of frequencies, he had essentially pick a magic frequency, which in this case was the hydrogen rest frequency in the laboratory frame, either on the sun or in Barry, or reference to the Barry center of our solar system. Those two frequencies only differ by 60 hertz, well within his 1 kilohertz bandwidth. He used the Arecibo telescope and circular polarization, and because of the spin of the and orbital motions of the Earth, you have to update your local oscillator frequency thousands of times in a 500-second integration, or something which is typical for the time you look at each one of these stars. And so this had to be done by computer, but in fact it seemed to work quite well. You just update the oscillator very, very frequently. The next picture is one of his block diagram of the system, and I'll just let you read everything for yourself. I don't have time to describe it other than to say eventually when the bottom line is you write the data on a 9-factor magnetic tape, and then you offline, you fast Fourier transform it and display it at 256 by 256 raster, which is shown in the next few slides, some of the polarized data. This is the raster. There are 256 times 256 points here. This is where the threshold for the computer displaying a point is only set at 1.5 standard deviations above the mean. You see you've got a lot of false alarms. The next slide shows the same kind of picture, but with a 3 sigma threshold. Notice how few false alarms are, but still many too many. The next slide is where you inject an artificial signal with the strength 0.1% of your system temperature, and there it is. It shows up very, very nicely. The next slide is a drifting signal, because you move the slides, no, the other way, because thank you. That's an artificial signal at the same level that was injected. It's either drifted over 10 channels or 10 channels wide. It shows up very nicely. And finally, the last slide this is the Horowitz with a very bad interference signal of having an antenna temperature equal to a system temperature artificially injected, but it doesn't show up at all because it's been smeared over 1,600 channels because it hasn't been drifting the way you might expect the extraterrestrial signal to drift. So in summary, as far as Horowitz's program is concerned, he looked at 185 stars within 25 parsecs. His sensitivity was a few times 10 to the minus 27 watts per meter squared, much better than these other programs. He did not include any known multiple systems in his 185 stars. And his sensitivity was the equivalent, so they could have detected a 1 megawatt transmitter or an Arecibo-like antenna out to essentially a 1 kiloparsec. And he showed that we can observe a very narrow frequency resolution very easily and display the data in such a way that that human beings can look at it and interference is not a problem, as this slide shows, because of the very narrow bandwidth. Okay, the final remarks I can make to summarize the recent program of Jill Tarter and collaborators, which take about 2 minutes. That's enough for the slides, thank you. The first view graph shows the work of the Tarter and collaborators. This program also achieved excellent frequency resolution and very many channels of the data. Tarter et al. Did is they used a 300-foot telescope, recorded the data on a VLBI Mark I processor, and the bandwidth of the tape is 330 kilohertz, and they record at a rate of 720 kilobits per second, and the tape takes about 4 minutes to run, and then they take it offline, and they take it 3,000 miles away to NASA Ames, where it's reduced and whatnot. They put in injected test signals both at the sky frequency and also at the intermediate frequency to make sure they could detect signals. And the final view graph shows just a summary of the results of this program. These 200 stars were all F, G, and K stars in the Royal Greenwich Observatory catalog. They observed at the OH rather than the hydrogen line rest frequency. And the and these are just some of the, you can just read these numbers for yourself. The 4-minute magnetic tape was very well matched with 4-minute tracking capability of the 300-foot telescope. And also the short integration times that they used are appropriate for the not having to correct for the fact that Earth is spinning around while you're taking your data, even though they use narrow frequency resolution, there's an extra K there, 5.5 hertz resolution. But even though they use 5 hertz resolution, they do not have to correct their global oscillator from the Earth's spin because their integration times were quite short. Thank you. That's it. Thank you very much. Well, some people have chosen 1420 because of this paper that Phil Morrison wrote 20 years ago, but I personally think that the choice is dictated almost as much, if not more so, by just where we have the best receivers right now. I know that our program was dictated by that consideration, and that the receiver is just best at 21 centimeters wavelength. We also have good receivers at 18 centimeters wavelength, where Joe Tarter is observing, and also up-and-coming good receivers at 22 gigahertz, where Rydell and Feldman are carrying out their program. So I think that's an important consideration.
I'd like to mention, of course, that the people who have the beacon knew you would have good receivers at 21 centimeters.
The question does, however, serve to emphasize that all the searches and data covered a very small portion of the database at a rather low sensitivity. So this is one of the things that causes us not to be discouraged with the negative results so far.
Yes. Well, apropos to that question, the idea of choosing a frequency, of course, means that you're looking for a beacon where you have some reasoning as to what frequency they would be setting up. If you're trying to intercept radiation, as Phil Morrison talked about, or if you're looking for leakage from a planet, then you have no idea what frequencies they would choose, and it becomes a much more difficult problem in finding the proverbial needle in the haystack. But I just want to mention that Steve Knowles at NRL and myself, Woody Sullivan, have looked for TV type leakage with the same sort of technique that Tarter et al. Used, looking for 1 hertz, sub-hertz sort of bandwidths, but now we don't know the frequency, so we just picked some bands at VHF, a couple hundred megahertz, and just Fourier transform them to death just at a couple nearby stars. Because of the computer problems, we still haven't got any results yet, but we have spent 2 or 3 days at Arecibo looking at a couple nearby stars.
Thank you for your contribution. Are there any more questions? If not, we'll move on to the next. Well, we'll have time at the end for further discussion. I've got today's movie here. We have to move on now to survey activities in the USSR, and I welcome to the stage Expedition Tracy.
The second research program and the safety program has been water powered in the USSR. It has been published and I won't speak on it in UK. The program determines a search strategy, which is still at the stage of testing and proving. In the USSR, the signal search is conducted using all directional radio telescopes at the wavelength 21 and 2. The observations are carried out during half a year or 24 hours. The foundation of an automatized receiving system of forest sky observation consisting of 16 spatial channels covering the whole sky is multi-channel radiometric will be used for the frequency allocation. The observations will be carried out continuously. For real extensive power of all directional variables, the system range will be more than 100 light years. The observations in the millimeter wavelength are planned using an antenna in space. The recent launch of the 10 meters in diameter cosmic radio telescope in the USSR is the first step in this direction. I will now speak about extraterrestrial intelligence and the problem of cold signal transmission. Why extraterrestrial signals have not been detected? By the present, an idea takes root on practically infinite capabilities of extraterrestrial intelligence, in particular in the energy generation. The possibility of creation of powerful generator for radio signal transmission is taken as a matter of fact. However, nobody tries to evaluate the reality of such construction from the viewpoint of laws of physics, biology, and mineral resources of the universe. Meanwhile, it is possible to study laws of progress of extraterrestrial intelligence if we accept only two states. An intelligence is anthropomorphous, based on the technology and its limiting potentialities of progress, a study which are allowed by physical and biological laws and by other restrictions. One must refer to restrictions the necessity of preserving the surrounding medium, including the circumstellar one. This is the requirement of the modern biology and the science of man. From this point of view, it is obvious that the use of energy on the planet is limited by the value of the permissible overheat of the planet. The further increase of the energy generation is possible only with the exploration of our circumstellar medium and drying energetic processes out of the limits of the planet in habitation. However, this limit of the energy generation does exist in this case. Preserving the interstellar medium is necessary not to a small but even to a greater extent, as well as preserving the former natural condition on the planet. Thus, generation of large additional energy above that our studies is impermissible. Accepting the North 1000, we intend that our solar system may storage the energy product for no more than 10 to the 23 watts. This is an enormous value. We may not product new energy product, but capture the solar one and transform it to our own storage. Obviously, the selection must not be complete, otherwise we would change, redistribute in space and spectrally all the energy of the solar radiation that radically change conditions for the inhabited medium of planets and in circumstellar system, and this impermissible. Probably without damage, one may use no more than 1,000 of the solar energy. Now we are prepared to consider a problem on the possibility of creation in any extraterrestrial intelligence a sufficiently powerful omnidirectional antenna to transmit pulses, signals in the boundaries of our galaxy. Civilization and problem of cold signal transmission. As it is known, there are two ways of signal transmission with the aim to attract attention of our civilization to our existence. This first is the transmission of direct signal to definite stars, and the second is the transmission of an omnidirectional signal. The second may use the increased for an essentially large possibility for detection. Let us consider possibility and condition of creation of such an omnidirectional antenna which would provide the possibility of its detection by the modeling methods of deception. For the artificial, it is sufficient in our opinion that the signal would be monochromatic. It is not observed in natural conditions, and this is the creation of the individual source. Synchronicity network length must be chosen for transmission. Simple calculations show that for the communication, the power of the order of the light radiation of middle star is 2 to 26 watts are to be radiated omnidirectionally. It is matter of fact that to radiate such a large power, the antenna system must be sufficiently large. Large dimension of the antenna is completely necessary in order to scatter the power losses in it and in generators, which leads to the heating problem. From this principal position, it follows that the antenna system of the beacon must be made of separate antenna located, for example, on the sphere, which would overlap all the surrounding space by the activity bar. In the general case, dimension of such a spherical antenna system would be defined by the power transforming into the heat, which are to be removed from the system. It is clear that the Earth cannot be used for the antenna location due to the wave absorption in the Earth's atmosphere. In spite of the fact that this absorption is insignificant, only 2% altogether, will transmit the power of 10 to the 21 watts. It is leads to the scattering in the Earth's atmosphere of 10 to the 19 watts, which 100 times exceeds the power absorbed by the Earth on the Sun. By virtue of the above, the antenna system together with generators must be placed in cosmos. Its cooling might be made only by the radiation. That is, in the heat contact with antennas radiation, radiators must be provided. As radiators, the surface of a sphere must show where transmitters are situated. At last, it is obvious that such a beacon must be placed in cosmos at a sufficiently large distance from the inhabited planet, so that the energy coming from it to the Earth would be, for example, 1,000 times smaller than that coming from the Sun. It is not difficult to calculate that if the power of the transmitter is 10 to the 26 watts, its removal from the Earth must be no more than 30 astronomical units. Thus, it must be taken out of the Pluto orbit. However, if we take into account the limiting permissible by pure dose of radiation, then the transmitter must be taken away at a significantly large distance. We give a calculation of the necessary parameters of the telescope for reception by antennas with the area 200 meters square. The diameter of paraboloid is 20 meters, with the noise temperature of the receiver 20 degrees of Kelvin, and the frequency band of one reception channel 200 Hz. We find the radius R of the spherical antenna based upon the requirement that the permissible heating of the antenna must not exceed 300 degrees. We take rather high efficiency of the generator, which has not been actually the present equal 0.9, that reduces the estimation of the value of R. Results of calculation are given in the table, which I must. Distance of communication, and power of breakdown necessary to maintain the signal. Antenna and a necessary distance from Earth. Astronomical. The second, the necessary power of the telescope regards the two columns shown in the radius. To estimate the real possibility of any breakdown building, we consider the real, a period of time necessary for construction of such a breakdown for the distance of 1,000 light years. It is with power to 10 to the 16 watts of power and having 1500 kilometers of containment sphere. For this purpose, we estimate the value of the energy of the cosmic transfer. Since the sphere must be sufficiently rigid, we take that its average value rate is 100 kilograms per meter cubic. The total mass of metal of the sphere would be 10 to the 19 tons. That's 15,000 times smaller than the mass of the Earth. The transport of this metal by rockets with a nearly light velocity requires approximately the same mass of nuclear fuel. Here, we are 10 to the 36 shows are being driven. As was mentioned above, the power of the energy release in the interstellar medium where the antenna would be used must be essentially smaller than the power of the solar radiation. For the solar system, this value is 10 to the 23 watts. With this power of the cosmic transport aimed at the antenna construction, time required construction equal near 1/3 million of years. It is unlikely that any civilization would create a similar construction. From the given sample population, it is seen that our civilization making search of signal by technical means which require an unacceptable large power from the transmitting side is condemned, you fail. Using as efficiently the power and technical means, we transfer all difficulties for communication to the transmitting side. And these difficulties are insuperable even for a very developed civilization possessing the term nuclear energy and quantum transport with really light noise. That is why do not absorb artificial signals which might be called a cosmic miracle. The energetic level of cosmic miracle, that's the signal which might be created in reality, is insufficient for catching by our means of detection. The ideal distance from which one can absorb a miracle by powerful modern radio telescope is probably no more than 100 or 1,000 miles. Thus, in contrast to the closely statement, that if we do not observe cosmic miracles, then our civilization is the same. One, in the galaxy, we say that the energetic level of miracles cannot be sufficiently high in order to be detected by the technical means used. It may occur that there are many civilizations, but difficulties of signal transmission and communication are extraordinarily large. From the above definite conclusion, follow about the strategy of saving. The theoretical aspect is necessary to investigate limiting stages of civilization development, which are defined by physical and biological laws and the given level of knowledge. The reality may want to reduce estimation of time by this method. About that, we try to give fragments of this approach. Further, a complete design of limited energy, space, transport, and other basic characteristics of civilization is necessary. In particular, the design of large scientific research system is needed. For example, system of brain detection of near stars, system of antenna for signal transmission, and search of signals from extraterrestrial civilization. All this permits to develop a more correct strategy. Population made show that the search for signal from stars is necessary to concentrate in the radius of 100 or 1,000 light years. Using for this purpose very powerful antenna, multi-channel spectrum analysis will continue to search. Recently, I just heard on observation and selection distinguished by the nature, for example, in the direction of remarkable object technology, and also synchronization of the beginning of observations by permanent events in the galaxy, all of us. All this increases the probability of detection. This idea is given by the Soviet scientist Nikolaev, are similar to that idea by proponent and Morrison. Thank you.
Future setting programs. Sounds like we have difficult enough.